Marsh. On behalf of the Appalachian Sun Ridge Improvement Association and several individual owners. The bottom line in this case, Your Honor, is that both the covenants and established Colorado law permit the association to do exactly what it did and establish the validity of the 2009 amendment that terminated the riding trail, eliminated the owner's maintenance obligations, and made use of that area conditioned upon permission of the affected owners.
Let me ask, is the thing that bothers me about this case is that people purchased in the subdivision and paid for easements. They all paid for easements. They also granted easements. I mean, easements were granted on the property they purchased, and they received easements on other property. And my concern is the power of the association to destroy those property interests, which appear of record in all of the deeds and plats and so forth. Is there anything that prevents the association from taking away these property rights?
Not in this circumstance, Your Honor, there isn't. You've addressed the concern that is addressed as well in Brown versus McDavid and other cases, where the discussion is the bargain that is struck by the property owners when they buy into a covenant-controlled community. That bargain, Your Honor, of course, is always a surrender of a measure of control over what would otherwise be an absolute property right, whether it's the right to paint your house, the right to use somebody else's property, which is what we're talking about in this case, or anything else, particularly in this case where the covenants make all documents affecting title to the property subject to the covenants, and the bargain, of course, included the association's, the assembled members of the association's right to terminate all of the covenants, some of the covenants, to change them, to modify them in any way that they see fit, or that a majority of them see fit at a minimum, depending on the circumstances under the statute. That result, Your Honor, is completely consistent with Section 217 of Kiowa, which establishes that in the majority of cases, no more than 67% of owners need consent to any amendment, and in other cases, a minimum of 67% must consent. That statute, notably, Your Honor, was adopted in 1991 with the requirement of unanimity in some cases. That requirement was rejected and the statute amended a few years later in 1998 to eliminate unanimity, and since has been rewritten several times without any requirement of any subset of adversely affected owners, without any requirement of unanimity, not to make amendment more difficult, but to make it more liberal, consistent with the goal of the statute to establish a clear, efficient, predictable structure for the operation and maintenance of common interest communities.
How big are the lots in this subdivision?
They vary somewhat, Your Honor, but they're approximately 5 acres apiece, I believe.
Mr. Marsh, while you took a breath, if I can, in the limited time you have, I would appreciate your addressing Mr. Barrick's concerns about the county and how the county's, those regulations fit in with Kiowa and with the covenants. It does cause me a little bit of heartburn here that it does look like that your client made an end run around the county. I mean, they got a letter that said, no, this is how you do it, and then you went ahead after the lawsuit was filed and did the amendment. It doesn't look very enticing, even though it may be perfectly right. But I would like you to address that, and then while you're at it, I have some concern about the plat. And your clients didn't amend the plat when they amended the covenants. And I'm no land use expert, so maybe you can straighten me out here. It looks to me like you've got a recorded amended covenant now where the easement is removed, but that plat is still out there with the covenant on there. The plat doesn't refer back to the covenant, as I recall. And so you've got a potential notice issue if people are looking in different places. So could you address those two concerns? One, remind you, Mr. Barrick's concern about the end run around the county, and then this issue about how, you know, that the plat was never amended here, and I'm concerned about the notice issue.
Of course. Douglas County's land use authority is not at issue here, Your Honor, and the reason for that is because Douglas County's authority addresses public rights. accessibility of water, accessibility of roads, the availability of utilities, all of these things that are public rights that are obliged or are necessary for the county to do what it needs to do. What we have at issue in this case is a purely private right, and let's not forget that Douglas County has expressly disclaimed any interest whatsoever in the riding trail. Another issue that we have there, Your Honor, is as a matter of statute, the covenants and the plat are one and the same document. This is Kiowa's definition of the term declaration. It defines the declaration as any recorded document of whatever stripe that is recorded to create a common interest community. It's undisputed that the plat and the covenants are both those same sorts of documents.
Maybe you can enlighten us, Mr. Marsh, on how, is there any law that says how one amends a plat?
Of course there is, Your Honor. It's Kiowa Section 217. In a common interest community, it says the declaration, using that defined term, can be amended by majority vote of defined percentages in certain, in specified circumstances.
So if you follow the Kiowa procedure in Section 217 to amend the covenants, that automatically amends the plat as well?
No, it amends the declaration.
Okay.
And of course, these covenants, which were amended, have always said that all documents affecting title are subject to the covenants. This is an addresses Judge Gabriel's concern regarding notice as well. When the covenants were amended, it changed the private rights subject of the covenants. It doesn't have any effect on the public rights. It doesn't change the utility easements. It doesn't change the dedication of the roads. It changes the purely private rights at issue in this case. It is binding as a matter of contract and as a matter of law on all of the private owners. It doesn't have anything to do with Douglas County, which is why they disclaimed their interest in this case years ago.
So record indicate, Mr. Marsh, why the private easement was put on the plat. I know in the, I have some sense in the land use community this is debated all the time. I think that's part of what's creating the problem here. I hear you that this is private, not public. So why are they on the plat at all?
The answer to your question is the record doesn't reflect why, Your Honor. I could answer it for you, but it would be outside the record.
It's a land use requirement. When you create a subdivision in the county, you have to put, and you're going to plat land, you have to put a plat. You have to have a plat.
Of course you have to.
And you have to normally have county approval to change from agricultural to residential uses. So, I mean, it's a county process. But my question to you is, I assume that you're relying on the retroactivity of Kiowa, that this HOA is not a Kiowa entity, has not elected to come under Kiowa.
That's very true, Your Honor, and in some circumstances that's relevant and in others it's not. Most particularly where it's not relevant is in Kiowa's Supremacy Clause, Section 319, which establishes that its provisions relative to how you amend a declaration, defined to include the covenants and the plat, are supreme to and control over any other contrary law existing on the date of its adoption or at any time thereafter.
But you're relying on contract principles for saying that the association has a right to do these things, and that the interest of the parties in the easements is subject to contract rights, which are amendable.
Correct.
And were amendable at the time that everyone bought in. Can the legislature adopt a law that amends existing private contracts?
That's an interesting question, Your Honor.
I think it's a very interesting question.
I believe, yes, it could in limited circumstances. For example,
well, affecting property rights.
Subject to constitutional restrictions, of course, the due process procedures, all of those sorts of things. But
what was the required vote in the original declaration?
The declaration at all times has required a simple majority vote for amendment.
Okay. So Kiowa didn't change that?
Correct. And in fact, had the declaration required an 80% or an 81% vote, which is what actually happened here, Kiowa would have said that is void as contrary to public policy. That public policy was added to Section 217 on amendment in 2005, and it is It is integral to what we're dealing with here, because we are not talking. There is, of course, a contract element of this case. The plaintiffs are bound as a matter of contract to the covenants, but there is a statutory overlay that cannot be waived or modified except as Kiowa makes clear on its face. And Section 217 notably is retroactive, is expressly retroactive under Section 117. So when the legislature said to the state of Colorado and its inhabitants and to this court that you cannot require more than 67%, and that any effort to do so is void as contrary to public policy, it was saying exactly that what Mr. Barrick suggests is the case, is that any subset or anything greater than 67% or unanimity, the legislature has directed that that is not possible as a matter of public policy. And that's the bottom line here, is that what Mr. Barrick has asked, what the appellants have asked, is for this court to rewrite both the covenants and existing Colorado law to reach a result that the legislature has rejected repeatedly in the several times it has rewritten the amendatory language in Section 217 without adding these requirements. There is also the issue of the effect of Evergreen Highlands, of course, and Brown versus McDavid. I won't address them at any length. Your Honors can read them. The short story is that Evergreen just flat doesn't say what Mr. Barrett suggests it does, which is that there is a legal prohibition of amendments founded upon reasonableness, foreseeability, burden, or anything else. The fact of the matter is that Evergreen was a contract case. The holding in Evergreen is in fact quite clear. At page 9 of the opinion, it says, quote, "We hold that the 1995 amendments to the Evergreen Highlands Restrictive Covenant was valid and binding because its terms were within the scope of the modification clause of the original covenants, and it was duly enacted by the requisite majority of property owners. That was the law during Brown. If it's authorized by the covenants and if the procedures were followed, it's valid and binding. It is the law of Evergreen, and it is the law of every other case in Colorado addressing this issue. If the covenants authorize it, and it is undisputed in this case that they do, and if the procedures were followed, and it is equally undisputed in this case that they were, then the amendment is valid and binding as a matter of law, and it should be equally undisputed that the 2009 amendment to Stone Ridge's covenants is valid and binding for those reasons alone."
Mr. Marsh, I had a statutory question. You referred to 217, and I want to take it back to 117 if I can. I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. It seems like the appellants here have cited 117.1, which talks about amendments for communities before 92 relating to events after 92. You relied in a footnote on 117.1.5, which talks about a community before created before 92 regarding events, I think, after 2006, which fits. Does 1.5 apply here and not 1? In other words, they're not cumulative. The statute is not very well written. One could read it to say both subsections apply. The reason I ask is because 117.1.5 directs you to 217. 117.1 directs you to the statute that says you look at the law in effect at the time. And I think, or it looks to me like 1.5 probably applies and not subsection 1, but I'm not sure.
I believe the short story is both of the statute is cumulative depending on the date of the conduct at issue, and because we are post-2006, either 217 subset 7, which is referenced in 117.1, or 217 subsection 1, which is referenced in 1.5, could apply in this case.
Okay, and then that brings, I think it was 117.1 relates to 120. It says you look to 122, which is the language that says you have to adopt in conformity with the procedures and requirements of the law that applied at the time the community was created.
Yes.
Do we look at that? I mean, I think they're probably consistent. I think Brown is probably that law and Kiowa is the law under 1.5, but I'm trying to figure out which law applies here.
I think you've identified it correctly. 120 says you can make an amendment if it is substantively permitted by the law at the time, either pursuant to that law or pursuant to Kiowa. Here we have both because, yes, Brown versus McDavid decided in 1983 was the law at the time and enabled precisely this kind of amendment, as does Kiowa.
So they are cumulative, 1 and 1.5 both apply here?
Yes.
Okay.
The other issue I'd like to address just briefly, Your Honors, is the fact that perhaps incongruently what we've all been discussing probably doesn't make any difference. And the reason for that is at page 19 of the appellant's reply brief, they admit expressly that the riding trails remain subject to association control. They remain subject to the association's passage of rules and regulations governing the use and maintenance of the trails. The covenants say their provisions are severable, and there is no argument whatsoever that the provisions of the 2009 amendment, which changed the use obligation to make it permissive, you must have the consent of an effective landowner, and to change the maintenance obligations to ratify current conditions and to say that no owner has any obligation to clear or maintain the trail. There's no argument that those are invalid for any reason. The argument is all about can the trail be terminated. So even were you to agree with the appellants that the trail cannot be terminated for whatever reason, the provisions of the amendment establishing that there's no maintenance obligation and the use is permissive remain severable and enforceable both as a matter of contract and a matter of law. Of course, all of the appellant's claims are dependent upon the obligation to clear the trail. It doesn't exist anymore. So even were the trail to exist in some inchoate fashion as a real estate interest or as a matter of policy, the appellant's claims in the district court still fail, still cannot prevail. I see that my time is up unless Your Honors have any further questions. Thank you.
Yes, sir. You have 7 minutes, sir.
Mr. would state that the Homeowner Association's power is unlimited. As long as they have the requisite votes, it's form over substance and nothing else controls. And we would assert to you that we have...
That may be in some absolute sense wrong, but what's wrong with it legally?
Well, again, it's the same thing we talked about before. It usurps Douglas County's ability to promote, encourage, and regulate land use in the county.
How do you respond to Mr. Marsh's argument that the county's authority is limited to public rights and this was private?
It's not limited to public rights. The case of Bollinger versus Neal, which is a Colorado Appeals case in 2010, I don't have the site, states that as a general rule, a plat can give rise to express easements or dedications for private or public use. Clearly, Douglas County knew what they were doing when they were allowing these easements for private use. And so to suggest now that those aren't applicable and should be disregarded is disingenuous. I also want to address the Brown case, which both the trial court and Mr. Marsh used to justify the proposition that form over substance controls, and simply state that the Brown case doesn't apply in our present situation. First, we have Brown, which is a Colorado Appeals Court in 1983. Since then, we've had the Evergreen case, which is a Supreme Court case decided in 2006 after the Brown case. Second, the covenants in Brown, which they were addressing, specified a termination date for the covenants and a termination date for easements created by those covenants. It also went one step further and said that the termination could be completed for the covenants and the easements with a majority vote of the homeowners. So there was already a foreseeability issue there when they already had anticipated and set a date for when those covenants and easements would go away. There's no indication in Brown that the easements and rights were created by plat as well. And then if you read Brown, the Brown case, later in the ruling, it states that the termination of easement was confined to a reading of these covenants and did not deprive the owners of other rights that might be created by other documents. And I wanted to address that site specifically at Brown 719. It states, we hold that all the covenants, easements, and servitudes created by the covenants were terminated. we conclude that each owner has no rights or benefits in the land except those expressly granted by their deeds or as otherwise found in the law. Here we have the different situation where we have my client's deeds specifically identify easements of record. Those easements of record are identified on the plat as riding trails. And we have the plat itself that identifies those riding trails. It's recorded, it's public notice.
Could you explain to me, Mr. Barrick, and again, I apologize for my ignorance on the land use, so maybe you can educate me. When the covenants get recorded, the amended covenants got recorded, are they recorded in the same place as the plat? Would somebody who is doing a title search be able to find the plat? Now, Mr. Marr says the declaration is amended, and I understand his argument. Your position is the plat was never amended here.
That's correct.
Now, so, but when the covenant recorded covenant, the amendment to the covenant gets recorded, is that notice to someone doing a title search that the plat was also amended?
Well, here, I don't believe it is, Your Honor. There is no recorded replat. What we have is a plat that was recorded first, covenants recorded second, change in covenants, no change in plat. Which one controls? I don't think it provides anyone notice of anything. All it does is create more confusion. And that's part of the process. There's two processes here that we have to identify.
And pardon me for interrupting. I'm looking at Brown versus McDavid. It says, we hold that all of the covenants, easements, and servitudes created by the covenant document were terminated on the date that the termination document was recorded. We conclude that each tract owner has no rights and benefits in the land in the estates except those expressly granted by their deeds and as otherwise found in the law. So what I'm understanding the court did there is it said, if you have any other rights other than the ones under the covenant, then those still exist. But I don't see how that's applicable here.
Well, I believe it is applicable because when we say except those expressly granted by their deeds, apparently their deeds didn't provide any other rights, and apparently there wasn't a plat that created property rights or riding trail easements as we have here. Here we have two separate.
Well, how do you know that from the doc? How do you know that from the opinion?
Well, I don't know, Your Honor. I think we have to make some reasonable inferences. They certainly, in this case, were evaluating only the covenants. They didn't take the next step to evaluate plats. They didn't take the next steps to evaluate.
They looked at easements and servitudes.
And so we have.
They said the easements and servitudes were knocked out. That takes care of the plat, doesn't it?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor. It doesn't identify those plats. And when it states expressly granted by their deeds, or otherwise found in law, what they're saying is we're only addressing these particular covenants. We're not looking at any other instruments or any other operations of law that would create property rights in these individuals.
Are you arguing that because the plat is senior, perhaps only by a minute or two, that because the plat is the senior document or earliest document, that it has to be amended also because of that fact?
No, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting it has to be amended simply because it's senior. I'm suggesting that both processes have to be completed in tandem because we have two separate authorities addressing these particular property rights. We have two documents, two legal authorities that are providing legal rights to these particular clients, and that both processes need to be completed in order to abandon those writing trails.
And you think Douglas County can enforce the right of these people to a private easement?
I believe they can because they have the right to regulate and monitor the particular plats. The plat's still there. From their standpoint, they regard those riding trails as being valid and enforceable.
I heard somewhere this morning they had abandoned any interest in the
government. I don't believe that's true. What they abandoned was, Mr. Marsh said that they disclaimed any interest in the riding trails. That's not correct. In their answer, what they did was disclaim the dispute or the enforcement of the private rights pursuant to the covenants. They did not disclaim their right over those riding trails. They disputed the covenant dispute among the homeowners because that's not their fight.
Well, would you agree they have no interest in these private easements?
I disagree. I believe they do have an interest in these riding trails. They're on the plat. Their obligation is to enforce plats, ensure uniformity, consistency, and enforceability of the things that they create.
Thank you. Both counsel for their arguments and briefs. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.